Now, on Bulldog Live, it's Second Amendment Tuesday. Joining Bulldog is attorney Penny Dean.
Brought to you by Riley Sports Shop in Hooksett. You can find them at 1575 Hooksett Road, or you can call them at 485-5000. Second Amendment with attorney Penny Dean next here on Bulldog Live.
Now, I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up. At least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good old boys down in Gonzales, I got one thing to say. Come on, make my day.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold, dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
1-866-823-1077 is our phone number here on Bulldog Live with attorney Penny Dean and Second Amendment Tuesdays. Good morning, Penny.
Good morning.
Well, you know, we think because it's between Christmas and New Year's that it's going to be a quiet time, don't we?
Not happening. Not happening.
That's why I'm still here.
The price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And I tell people that eternal vigilance doesn't mean you get to come home, walk in, kick back in your easy chair, and watch TV every night. You've got to work on legislation. You've got to call your reps. You've got to be active in your clubs. You have to do things. And, you know, because if not, remember everybody was bent out of shape when the Stand Your Ground, Right to Kill Bill passed?
Oh, that's, yes.
Remember the opponent called it the Stand Your Ground and Your Right to Kill Bill?
Right,
and
right,
I said
right.
that the bill is worthless as you know what's on a boar hog, okay? It's just not going to help people. And everyone said, oh, Penny. And I said, you know, the really sad thing is I'm almost always proven to be right in Serena. I'm sad to say it, but I'm always right.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the New Hampshire Supreme Court, sadly, basically in their dicta saying that I'm right, meaning I'm really, really disappointed in our Supreme Court. And the case that I'm referring to, it's the state of New Hampshire v. Dickens, and I'm very bad on French names, Etienne, maybe, E-T-I-E-N-N-E. So I'm going to call it the Dickens case because I cannot correctly pronounce his last name.
Okay.
And Mr. Dickens was convicted of first-degree murder of a Larry Lemieux. And here is the thing. He alleged self-defense. And I think the reason that this case is so very, very important to those of us who care about the Second Amendment in New Hampshire is people have said, oh, in New Hampshire, you know, you don't have to retreat in your home. And I said, I think principally you shouldn't have to retreat in your home. But I'm not one of the five black people that wear robes that set, you know, in
well,
the
five
court.
People that wear black robes.
Yeah.
Right.
That bottom right.
Yeah.
I'm
okay.
Not one of the five that wear black robes, absolutely. And so, and they're the people, you know, my father used to say, it is not he who maketh the law that's the giver of law. It's he who interpreteth the law that's the giver of law. And it's really sad, and you have to make very, very sure to those in legislature use strong and clear language, okay? Because if not, the Supreme Court, who are human beings, are going to take their own biases and interpret it the way, you know, they think is best.
Right.
And they say they use plain language, and there have been cases that I respectfully disagree that they do interpret clearly based on the plain language. And this case, which is very, very instructive to people, in what most people would call dicta throughout the decision, they go into the fact, we are not persuaded that the legislature's use of the term dwelling was meant to restrict the common law privilege. Here's the key word, common law privilege, not right, privilege. Words mean things, right?
Right. We were talking about that last week, yes.
Right. Common law privilege to use self-defense or use deadly force in self-defense without retreating. Absent a clearer legislative indication, we will not construe a statute to change the common law.
Huh?
Yeah. My point is, red is red except for when I interpret as tomato pink.
Okay.
Okay, this is a December 21st decision of the New Hampshire Supreme Court. So you have to look at these words. Legislature's use of the term dwelling was meant to restrict. Everyone thought now that our right to self-defense had been to anywhere we have a right to be. Well, that law has been in effect, right? New Hampshire Supreme Court decided this case.
Yeah.
And they're still talking about the word privilege to use deadly force. Not right to self-defense, but privilege. Okay? And if we go on and pick out parts of this, this is a 40-some page decision, which from the New Hampshire Supreme Court, that's a very, very long decision.
Well, I will post this on the Second Amendment Tuesdays page at BrianTilton.com later tonight.
Please do. And people, I know that people who don't normally read the law, it takes them a long time to read these things. What better could you read? Because you can all, you know, pound your chest and feel good in the streets. Do you want to know reality? Which my job is to give people reality, not kumbaya, make you feel good.
Well, let me just stop you for just 1 second, because in this debate over SB 88,
yep.
you know, the right to kill bill, as yes. many tried to portray it to be.
All those crazy names, yeah.
Right, and as the governor was going around saying this gives drug dealers the right to kill people on the street just for looking at them bad and the like, and he would say that, well, you know, you have the right to use deadly force in your own home, as if it were an absolute right that you have. And I kept looking at these things and I kept sounding the alarm bells. No, you don't. I have had various law enforcement tell me that you must be in fear for your life. Just because somebody is in your home that may not belong there doesn't give you the right to kill them.
And not only that, you have to be able to prove, because it's basically, in my opinion, a burden shifter.
Uh-huh.
You have to be able to prove to a jury you were in fear of your life, but more importantly, the trial judge is an incredibly powerful person, a gatekeeper, and the trial judge determines which evidence a jury will hear.
Yeah.
So people think, well, I'll just go into court and tell my story, and my answer is, oh, no, you won't necessarily. Trial judge will determine what can be heard. And I think, and in many trial judges in this state have disagreed with me, sadly, is that you need to be able to have expert witnesses in self-defense to come in and explain these cases. Because sometimes you get jurors, some of which have never owned a firearm in their life, some
right.
who don't understand self-defense principles, who don't understand certain actions. And really, they need to be educated no differently than a jury that's listening to a medical malpractice case or any other, you know, specialty type of case.
And even people like us in the media need this kind of education, because we'll see a case where a police officer uses deadly force against a knife-wielding guy who is charging at them about 10 feet away. And people say, oh, well, that was excessive use of force. No, it wasn't.
That person, absolutely, at 10 foot away, no matter who he is, be cop, whoever, 10 foot away, a guy with a knife is going to be knifing you. You got to shoot,
mm-hmm.
assuming you want to live. You know, you have,
right.
to, you have to stop the threat. And a person that distance, you're absolutely right. And I'm the last person to condone bad behavior from cops. But in that situation, the cop really has no choice.
Right.
You know,
right.
he really has no choice.
I only bring that up because these are cases that repeat themselves, whether they be
again
in New Hampshire or some other state or wherever it is. You always see the headline from time to time, whether it be 20 feet away, 10 feet away, or whatever. Well, how could he be a threat 20 feet away? Well, the tooler drill.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really good example. You know, and I think the bottom line is in these type of cases is that it's really a disservice to the defendant when a defendant can't get an expert witness in, when the court won't allow an expert witness in, saying the jury, you know, doesn't need that type of education. Well, they absolutely do need that type of education.
Right, because you have to, it's critical to proving that there was a threat. You know, this guy that's in your house, he may have had a knife, or he may have indicated that he had a knife, and he's coming at you. You're in your bedroom, and your kid's bedroom is right next door, and he's coming up your way. What are you going to do?
So if someone's at my front door, I have to retreat to my very back wall before I can defend myself?
Is that what this case was basically saying?
It does in many, many areas. Now, this case was a roommate case, okay? The man was in his home, and his roommate is the person that he killed. And he said it was self-defense. So this was a case where both people had a right to be in the home.
Okay.
You know, because they're both roommates. But the Supreme Court, in some of its language and doing its analysis, I think words mean things. And I think, basically, when you look at some of the things like privilege to defend yourself, okay, when you look at some of the words they chose and the phrase they chose and the cases they choose to emphasize from the past, it's very disheartening. It's disheartening because the bottom line is, how in the world do you, after the fact, unless you have audio and video running in your house at all times from all angles, how do you prove what the two of you said and did at what point?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is really important. Basically, and the other terms they've used is a person is justified in using deadly force upon another person when he reasonably believes that such other person is likely to use any unlawful force in the commission of a felony against the actor within such actor's dwelling or its curtilage. And here's what they said. We rejected the defendant's argument and acknowledged the well-established common law principle that a person is generally justified in using deadly force only to meet the use of unlawful deadly force or an imminent threat to life or basic body integrity. Now, here's what you have to look at. When someone starts pounding on you, do you have to wait till the last blow before you're going to go in a coma until you fight back?
Well, Penny, I think the key word in there is about to commit a felony. And that right there, I mean, I'm sorry, I don't always know the difference between a misdemeanor and a felony and the like. Yeah, you know, how am I, the layman, supposed to determine whether somebody in my home is about to commit a felony or simply a misdemeanor or whatever it may be called?
And don't you worry, when you have about a half a second to decide that, we're going to take the next year pouring it over bit by bit and tell you when you were wrong. You know, I mean, you've got a half a second to determine fight or flight, right?
Uh-huh.
And the police charge you, and we're going to just dissect that over the past year while we charge you and whatever. But don't you worry, we'll let you know. And you're like, but I only had a half a second to make a determination that if I was wrong, I die.
Right.
You know, or if I was right, I die, I guess would be the way to put it.
And this, too. And look, you know, how many of us have had these conversations with others? You know, say, if somebody comes in your house, you kill them because dead man can tell no tales. Yeah, well, they don't need to talk, do they?
That's exactly right. And I think one of the portions that the Supreme Court quotes in this is very, very disturbing. It's quoted from what's called 3N Singer and J.D. Singer, Statutes and Statutory Construction, 7th edition, 2008. Here, the rule supporting interpretation of a statute to avoid or minimize its abrogation of the common law is supported by public policy. Under the defendant's reading of the statute, even if a person faced with a situation other than those specifically set forth in RSA 627-4, Roman numeral 3, knew that he could, with complete safety, take some action short of using force to protect himself or another from the use of deadly force, he would still be justified in taking a human life. Now, you're going to say, well, this is good language. Wait till you get the caveat.
Okay.
Given the constitutional recognition of the natural right to life and the great weight that law and society place on the sanctity of human life, see State v. Grierson, 96 NH 36, 1949. The maxim, this is very important, the maxim of retreating to the wall is a statement of fact properly illustrating the weight to be given to the sanctity of human life in determining the reasonable necessity of killing a human being. The legislature most likely did not intend this result. We decline to infer from the legislature's silence regarding the reasonable necessity requirement in the deadly force provision of the justification of the statute that New Hampshire citizens have the right to kill when it's not necessary under the circumstances.
So, put this in plain English for us.
Here's what it basically says. You have to show that it was absolutely necessary to kill that person.
Mm-hmm.
In order for it to be justified, but this goes back to needing a self-defense expert. The only way that you can practically stop a person is shooting center body mass, okay?
Right.
As a practical illustration, you shoot center body mass. That's the same place that's going to kill them,
right?
Okay, so people always say, well, shoot them in the leg. Well, first of all, legs don't shoot. So even if a person, you shoot them in the leg, they can still knife you, they can still shoot at you because they still have their upper body. The other thing is, in fight or flight, how many of you think you can honestly hit a leg, which is a much smaller target?
Right.
It's just really not realistic. And the bottom line is they talk about reasonably necessary, but the average person, even though they know things instinctually, they cannot enunciate it well enough to a jury, and they also don't have any facts and figures to support them. Okay? Mm-hmm. How many people can say, well, in my last 22 attacks, I determined that even if I shot both legs, he could still shoot back at me? Can't say that to a jury. You know, it's just plain silly. They don't, you know what I'm saying? They don't have those experiences.
Sure.
And so they need a self-defense expert to come in and say, look, you know, this theory of shooting them in the legs or shooting them in the arm and disabling them, okay, an arm is a moving target. You wave your arm around and try and shoot someone's arm, okay? It's just not going to happen.
Just watch any movie where, you know, it can be, you know, we can use Sopranos as an example or whatever, where somebody gets shot in the leg, they're writhing on the ground, and they're still able to get off a few shots from their hand, you know?
Absolutely, but there's a lot of real-life cases with police officers returning fire when they've been shot.
Yes.
You know? And, you know, and other individuals in law enforcement. So we
just
have
watch
a lot
True
of-
TV. You see that on almost any given night.
That's absolutely true. That's absolutely true. And so they talk about it, and more importantly is that the New Hampshire Supreme Court in the same paragraph says, noting that the legislature is free to amend the statute as it sees fit should it disagree with our interpretation. New Hampshire General Court, are you listening?
Uh-huh.
Please amend the statute even more clearly so that the New Hampshire Supreme Court knows that self-defense isn't well, you know.
Well-defined. It's not well-defined.
It certainly isn't. And in most cases, they're going to say, well, are you sure he was going to kill you? Did he tell you he was going to kill you? When madmen come out of the alley to attack you, do they say, oh, I'm just going to rape you, oh, I'm just going to take your purse, oh, I'm just going to kill you? When do they tell you that?
Right.
I mean, you just don't get that in the same way as a practical matter when someone's in a fight.
Well, even if they did, and if they're dead, how are they going to say, yeah, I said that, you know?
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah, I said I was going to kill him, so that's why he killed me first. Or
right,
whatever.
Right.
Yeah. The bottom line is that even if someone is, quote unquote, just going to rob you, you don't know that when they come out of the alley with a knife. I don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so it's reasonable to say, okay, this man has a knife. He is behaving in a threatening manner towards me. Reasonable, normal people do not go around with knives threatening other human beings.
Right.
Okay, and so that alone says this man is willing to do illegal acts. And so what level of illegal acts is he willing to do? I don't know, but I got to tell you, it doesn't make me feel good.
Exactly. I, in other words, I don't want to wait to find out either.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And then one of my real big pet peeves, anybody who does defense work will tell, most people I think that does defense work will tell you, that you have to fight really hard, with certain exceptions, for what's called discovery, which is all the information the state has that's relevant to your case mm-hmm. and relevant to your defense. Now, people, I have clients say, no, it says right here in the rule book they have to give it to you. And I say, yeah, that's the rule book, and I'll tell you about reality.
Yeah. Here's what goes on in a courtroom.
Yeah, he says, no, you just got to tell the judge. I said, yeah, I've told that judge many times, and, you know, we've had this big to-do. So I said, there's theory and there's reality. You're supposed to have what's called open book discovery, which is once you do a not guilty plea, all these things are supposed to happen. But that hasn't been my experience. It's always the case. It's a constant battle. And so, and sometimes you find, as you do in this particular case, after the fact that there's information that was withheld from you. So in this particular case, one of the state's witnesses...
And I'm going to have to start wrapping this up here, too.
One of the state's witnesses had done some bad things and had deals with the state. Now, if you're a defendant on trial, would you like to be able to point that out to the jury?
Absolutely.
Well, if they don't give you that information, can you point it out to the jury?
No.
And if you find out after the fact, would you want a new trial?
Absolutely.
Well, he wanted a new trial, too, and the New Hampshire Supreme Court said that's what's called harmless. You know, there was so much other evidence that this doesn't matter.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and so if you're the person on trial, can you get into each juror's head and determine if that would have mattered? Would have that tipped the scale?
Right.
You don't know. I think that you really need to err on the side of, you know, you're taking this man's liberty for the rest of his life.
Yep.
And so I think these are just things for the self-defense people to read and think about, because there are some what I call bad flavored nuggets in here.
Well,
that I think
I'm also concerned that there has been if there's been any reporting on it, I've missed it. You know, I don't think I remember seeing anything in the newspaper, certainly no TV stories and the like, so.
And this is huge because this is a 40-some page decision, which coming from the New Hampshire Supreme Court is incredibly rare. It's incredibly detailed analysis. But I think some larger principles that they're still espousing are very detrimental to self-defense.
Exactly. Well, anyway, I'll have that on the Second Amendment Tuesdays page at briantilton.com. Attorney Penny Dean, how do people get in touch with you?
230-9999.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And thank you to Riley Sports Shop and Hooks It for making this segment possible. You can reach them online at rileysguns.com or call them at 485-5000. Been in the business for over 50 years. They all know about guns. They have a whole bunch of professionals working there. These people hunt. They use a lot of the weapons that they sell. They certainly know what they're talking about. Riley Sports Shop and Hooks It. Penny Dean, thank you. Chat with you next Tuesday.
Thank you. Next Tuesday.
All right. Bye-bye.